I bet you thought it was only the Beatles that sang that song, Taxman. That was Billy Ray Vaughan. He's dead now, I understand, but he was a hell of a blues singer, if you've ever heard any of his stuff, singing one of our favorite songs, The Taxman. Since I got heavily involved in the Tax Rebellion back in the early 70s, some of you people may be old enough to remember that, most of you not. And that's when I refused to pay income taxes on the Vietnam War, not to hurt the troops, but to try to get the troops out of there in a no-win war. It was impossible to win over a long length of time. And for what? What were we there for in the first place? Can anybody tell me? Oh, it was against the international communist conspiracy. That cropped up a lot, didn't it? Yeah, that was the first time the IRS threatened to seize my house, put signs all over my fence and everything. And we got up one morning, went out and saw this these signs from the IRS were going to seize this house, and we'd scheduled to go on a trip. And my wife says, well, what are we going to do? I said, we're going to get in a goddamn car and go on our trip. And we went on our trip to Canada. And when we came back, for some reason, all the signs were gone. I didn't even take them down. And they never acted upon their threat. Which just shows you got to be resilient. You have to be tough. And you have to say, spit in their eye, man. And if you're not capable of doing that, get out. Because you're not going to make it. That's right. Like PayPal contacted me a week or so ago and said they froze my account, PayPal. I'd been a customer for, I don't know, at least several years with no problems. But someone put up a stink, and I think I know what area it came from. In the last few weeks, I've been putting up quite a bit of very good precise information on the Middle East, and from mainly left-leaning authors who are honest, left-leaning. There are people like that, just as like there is on the right. There's some honest right-wing writers, and there's some left-wing writers that are okay. Well, we started putting them up on our internet, which reaches a hell of a lot of people. And all of a sudden this happens. Which is like the old adage that I've told you many times. The way I figure out what to do is like playing a piano. You sit down with one finger and start hitting all the keys on the piano. Yeah, and when you hit the key that causes the people in the room to go gaga, don't hit that note there, it bothers us. Well, that's then the note I work on. I just keep hitting that note until until it wears out of acceptability. So anyhow, that's my theory of politics. Yeah, very simple. Keep plinking on the piano keys until you hit the key that drives everybody crazy. And then you're there. You've got the right program. Well, in the meantime, there's several people who have paid their donations for this month. Of course, most of them come in by check, money order, or cash. But the ones who pay by PayPal, I want you to go up there and complain and get your money back, because there's $56 up there in that account. You know, big deal. They really got a big fish this time. Anyhow, and complain and get your money back. And then send it to me by cash, check, or money order. And I've said also, of course, to send to our P.O. Box, 401 Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. And also, I'm going to go out on a limb, which some people would say, you better not do that. You can send it to the bunker. And that's 1134 South Ferguson Road, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. And just make that to Tommy or Tom Metzger. Probably better to do that. Yeah. And we'll get it. That way, if they try to screw me up at the post office, which I don't think they're going to do, we have an alternative address to send your donations to and your letters to and so forth. I know some guys out there are going to say, oh my God, you're making a target out of yourself. Man, I've been a target for 30 years. And they ain't got me yet, and I'm not really that worried about things. Like a lot of people are scared shitless about everything. Not me. I'm a fatalist. If it's going to happen, it's going to happen. And until it happens, do whatever you feel like doing. Also, it would be fun if they didn't give you your money back through PayPal, to take them to small claims court. Nothing pisses off a corporation more than to be drug into a small town court where they have to have somebody at the cost of quite a bit of money appear and defend themselves for a $50 deal. That's, you know, you may find that handy for other things. You can take a corporation to a local court, cost them all kinds of money. Well, in the meantime, don't ever, ever give evidence or testimony about a bank robbery. I'm a great fan of bank robbers. Now, don't get excited. I don't plan to rob a bank, and I have never robbed a bank. But I think bank robbers are far more honest than bank owners. So if you get, if they try to drag you in to be on a jury, or give evidence, I have nothing to say. I can't remember that guy. I can't remember that guy in the straw hat and cowboy boots. and if they press you on a jury, you say, I'll judge the law and the facts. That's from Lysander Spooner and his treatise on trial by jury. And I did that at least once. They had a guy up on a petty marijuana charge. I wasn't going to find him guilty of nothing. So I said, they called me and said, oh, how are you going to rule on this yourself. I said, I'm going to rule on, I'll judge the law and the evidence. And the judge and both the attorneys on both sides said, get him out of here, get him out of here. So I was only in there a short time. Because I think most of the people who are being tried in these courts are far more innocent than the people running the court. What do you think? I bet most of you might think that if a black man came before me in court, that I'd automatically go against him. No, not I would not. On rape or something along those lines, that's a different story. But still, he'd have to be proven guilty. But I would never find anybody guilty just because they were black. Because millions of great white men in the South gave honest opinions in court. This idea that every time a black person went into court in the South, they were found guilty and hung is ridiculous. Of course, in a lot of cases, they did get a miscarriage of justice, but in most, the people, the white people, were good people in the South, and they weren't going to arbitrarily find a black man guilty of something he didn't do. Anyhow, I know that Black Lives Matter would scoff at that and ridicule it, but it's the truth, if you'll read history. I notice on this new false flag Breitbart radio program on the Internet, like this morning, they were people coming around and saying that Cruz is a globalist. Well, a lot of people called in and said, no, Cruz is not a globalist because his wife works for Goldman and Sachs. Well, they said that Sachs is not a globalist outfit. You can't run a bank, a big bank like that, without being tied in globally. But even if they're totally nationalists and not globalists, Goldman and Sachs, they're a crook. They're crooks. You remember the bailouts and all that kind of stuff that got bailed out? Here's the right-wing so-called conservative. And the reason for that is the guy's name is Steve that runs the show. And he was educated at Harvard, and he worked for Goldman and Sachs. Yeah, and that whole Breitbart deal is set up on the theory that they hate racism. Yeah, so they hate you, and they hate me. I'm going to try to dig out what Breitbart, the original Breitbart who's dead now, said about race. They say it every day. I'll play you an excerpt of what goes on the Breitbart channel. It's enough to gag a maggot. They really think this shit means something. They really think that they can... Oh, man. It's unbelievable how we do it over and over and over again.
Arizona, Wisconsin, and New York. You're projecting to get to that 1,000 by the end of April. He's got to win those three states. Is that not correct?
Well, he's got to win some of them in Wisconsin. You know, he doesn't have to win all 42 of them. It is winner-take-all proportionate by district. So, but he does definitely have to win 95 in New York. You know, and then on the 26th, we get back to a Super Tuesday type setup where you've got Connecticut, Delaware, Maryland, Pennsylvania, and Rhode Island. And, you know, again, he's got to be up around 1,000 by my numbers, you know, by the end of April to have a chance to get to that 1237.
So it looks like it's gonna be, we're gonna have Michael Patrick Leahy on tomorrow to discuss this, but it looks like it's a lift. It's a heavy lift for Donald Trump right now to do this.
I think so. I mean, I think it's doable and he can do it again. You know, I think it's something, you know, New York is gonna be crucial for him, but again, the 2 weeks in between Arizona, Utah, and Wisconsin, you know, retail politics and that kind of thing is really gonna be dictate, you know, not only what happens in Wisconsin, but it could, you know, kind of dictate what happens the rest of the way between there and June 7th, which is when the last primaries are held.
Matt, thank you.
Unbelievably, only 6 weeks before Cleveland.
Yeah, no, it's really, this is going to go down, I think, all the way through June and then obviously all the way to Cleveland. This is going to be one that's going to be for the books. Matt Palumbo from Aventine Group. Thanks, Matt. We'll have you back on next week to go through the math again. Wisconsin and New York, you're projecting to get to that 1,000 by the end of April. He's got to win those three states. Is that not correct? The delegates. Let's go to Oklahoma and Nathan. Nathan in Oklahoma, you're on Breitbart News Daily. How can we help you, sir?
Good morning. Hey, I wanted to address something that Barbara said earlier about how Heidi Cruz works for Goldman Sachs and how she's afraid, you know, Goldman Sachs will influence Heidi and influencing, you know, Ted when he's, you know, potentially president or whatever.
Yeah.
I just want to understand how anyone can, you know, who's a Trump supporter can have the audacity to say that when Trump himself is probably good friends with those people who are up there. He's part of the billionaire class. He has said he's done some sketchy things in the past to get to where he is now. So what makes him any different than the people she's afraid of in Goldman Sachs?
Yeah, have you, by the way, have you heard anything in Ted Cruz's, in his talks or anything like that, that leads you to believe that he would be a supporter of any type of globalist agenda? Let's leave the wife aside for a second, because like I said, I worked at Goldman Sachs for many years, and it's a, you know, it's a terrific investment bank. You can be a nationalist. I've always considered myself a nationalist. I actually worked at Goldman Sachs after I was a naval officer and went to Harvard. But have you seen anything in Ted Cruz's talks? Have you any inclination that you would think that he's not when we talk about?
And these are supposed to be the real conservatives. Goldman Sachs is not a globalist bank. They don't deal offshore or anything. They don't manipulate trade. They don't manipulate anything. All they do is get bailed out by the U.S. government, the taxpayers. These guys, every election, all of a sudden you got millions of experts come out of the woodwork. Everybody from waitresses, truck drivers, military generals, or whatever, you know, not to put those kind of people down, but the point is that they're all experts, and they call in. This guy keeps saying, well, I got to get you off real quick here because we got hundreds, we got thousands of people trying to call in. And I'll guarantee you that is a bunch of bullshit. They probably got a lot of people, but trying to make it sound like they've got thousands of callers is ridiculous. I'd like to see proof of that. Let me see some proof there, you conservative, wonderful guy, you worshiper of Ronald Reagan and all that kind of crap. What you have to remember is these people are 100% against you. If you're a white racial separatist, if that's what you are, then these people are 100% against you. And if they could, they'd do you in. Maybe not now, but sometime all are evangelical. All these evangelicals that are following Trump, I mean not Trump, but Cruz around, if you're not a strict believer in their brand of religion, they'd hang you from a lamppost if they could. And don't kid yourself, it may happen. Well, here's a notice I just got in here from Kike Central out of Israel. How about that? Get this, every child should enjoy Purim. Of course, you know Purim was a celebration of genocide back in the old days. Yeah, it's genocide. But that's okay. They're God's chosen peoples. Anyhow, but it's hard to have fun when you're constantly hungry. Israel? I thought they had plenty of food. 756,900 children in Israel are living below the poverty line. Here's your chance to spread some happiness with your donation. Can provide a meal for a hungry child. Is that all, you cheap bastards? A Mishloach Manah basket for a needy family. There should be no poverty in Israel with God's chosen people. Everyone should have a fat belly, considering all the money we sent over there from the United States. Oh, you can't eat tanks? You can't eat bullets. You can't eat Molotov cocktails. Help make this Purim a happy one. this genocidal celebration for hungry Israeli Jews. Donate now. How about that? A few years ago, I checked on the poverty rate of Jews in New York City. You know, that's the center of Jew money in this country. One of them. Should be all kinds of food and money and clothes. But I found that at that time, there were 250,000 Jews in New York City, that's Jew York City, living under the poverty line. Wait a minute. I thought the Jews were God's chosen people and they took care of their people. They loved their fellow Jews. They took care of their fellow Jews. Don't sound like it to me. Now, I imagine it's probably 500,000 living below the poverty line by now, because that was 10 years ago. You might want to check it out. Anyhow, the Jews in Israel have turned this celebration of genocide into sort of a Christmas holiday or something like that, you know. They pass out candy and they dress up in costumes and all that. They don't talk about the genocide that their forefathers committed there. How about that? Ask a local Jew, what about Purim? What about the genocide of Purim? It won't make any difference. They'll turn it around into, oh, we were being persecuted, so we had to perform genocide. Got a list here of what your money will sponsor for these poor kids in Israel. For $3,600, we'll sponsor a free restaurant branch for 1 week. Don't hold your breath for that to come in. $1,800 will provide 350 hot, nutritious meals for little children. $1,000 will provide 180 hot, nutritious meals for children. $864 will sponsor a food shopping card for a family for a year. $500 will provide 90 hot, nutritious meals for children. $360 will provide 60 nourishing meals for the elderly. Only 60 meals for the elderly? Christ Almighty, they got a lot of elderly. I was over there. I saw the elderly. $180 will provide 30 meals on wheels to the disabled homebound. Disabled homebound only get 130 meals? Jeez. We get a lot better than that with Meals on Wheels from the local senior citizen club. $72 will sponsor a food shopping cart for a family for a month. And then the last slot, which is probably the one they mostly sign up for, and that's other. And then it says, every little bit makes a difference. Yeah. Well, if you take some of that money that you're getting from the U.S. government and a lot of other governments and quit buying weapons to kill Palestinians and other people with, hell, you could have everybody live, everybody'd weigh 300 pounds in Israel. And the same goes for New York City. If you split up that war budget and spread it around, we'd have new bridges, new railroads, new highways, and everybody be fat, dumb, and happy and fed well. Even the poor Negros. An interesting discussion during the night or in the wee hours, about they were arguing about people's moving out of these. How come we have all these poverty centers all over the country? How come? They say, well, you could just move. But the guys say, they can't move. They don't have the money to move. Maybe not the inclination to move. And if they move away, they lose their family support. You know, you have a support of friends and relatives in your community. So when you leave one area and go to another, you're leaving a lot of support behind you. So obviously, these people are not inclined to pick up and move, even if they had the money. And when they get to the other town, they can't afford to rent a room. They don't have a job. They don't, which is true. Is that racism? Is that separation? Is that segregation? I think that's part of the program. Maybe that's the way the big boys do it. you guys want to do it the hard way. We're going to do it the easy way. We'll just make it so poor they can't move. Gee. But, you know, that works for white people, poor white people, too. But a lot of times I notice poor white people are stupidly pick up and move clear across the country with nothing but a couple of sandwiches and an old car. And then they get right back into the same old poverty. Where are they going, you know? So I think sometimes the blacks that stay in the ghetto among their own people and lean on each other a little bit are smarter than these white, drugged up young people that take off across the country and lose their support. Of course, their families are probably glad they're going across country to get rid of them. The webmaster just told me a few of you people out there in the radio club do not have a password set up on the website for the archives and special speeches of old, like Robert Miles I sent out recently. You may want to mention that if they want access by email. And go to merchandiseresist@yahoo.com and request your password. Yeah. Over and out. Well, this story had to be about somebody black. Probably both the perpetrator and the victim. You'll see why when I read this to you. Boston police are investigating a possible hate crime. Hopefully, if they can find a white person to pin it on. If not, it won't be a hate crime. If it's just black on black, it's never a hate crime. After a Molotov cocktail-like device was hurled through the window into the living room of a South Boston home. Black neighborhood, of course. We didn't notice anything was awry until this morning, said the resident of the home, who the Herald is not identifying because she is the victim of a crime. Well, the thing didn't go off, so it's not too much of a crime. The woman said her fiancé's parents in town to go wedding dress shopping with their daughter first noticed the broken window when they arrived at the house. My wonder is broken. We started cleaning it up, and then that's when I saw a plastic bottle. It looked like a Molotov cocktail pretty much, unquote, the woman said. It was plastic, not glass, and it has cloth in it, and it was burned. Don't these people ever study the books? You gotta be glass, you idiot. Anyhow, let's go on with this fiasco here as soon as I get my everything straight here. The woman said the cloth had gone out on its own and nothing else caught fire in the basement and she and her fiancé used as a living room. The Boston Police Bomb Squad firefighters and police detectives are responding to the home after the residents called police, who said the incident likely happened between 1 a.m. and 2 a.m. yesterday. Police said there were no injuries and it was unclear if the bomb bottle had a flammable liquid inside. Well, that would have something to do with it. Looks to me like a phony hate crime situation. Several neighbors said they heard what sounded like glass breaking in the middle of the night. Quote, they've been really good, the Boston police, the woman said. They brought the civil rights detectives out here just to make sure, because we're gay and I'm black, and they just wanted to go through all the avenues, see if we could set up some white man. She also said the episode could be chalked up to random St. Patrick's Day mayhem. Yeah, us niggers like to raise hell on St. Patrick's Day. We haven't had any incidents. Our neighbors are awesome. We got wonderful neighbors. I haven't had any beef with anyone here. I'm hoping it's just a random thing and they won't come back, the woman said. I don't feel threatened. I don't feel intimidated. Yesterday, investigators, including a police dog, went in and out of the home, and broken glass from the basement window littered the sidewalk. "They're just wonderful people," said the former Boston mayor, Raymond L. Flynn, a neighbor. Maybe the mayor threw a Molotov cocktail through their window. It's trying to get them to leave the neighborhood, maybe. It's so sad to hear something like that happen. It's not characteristic of this neighborhood at all. Isn't that what they always say? Isn't that what these people always say? "This never happened in my neighborhood. This is a peaceful neighborhood. We hardly ever have a machine gun attack around here. Well, maybe once a month." Now, this is something new. How about this? Rapid City, South Dakota. One police officer is now dead following a shooting in Indiana Saturday. Wow. I wonder how far that was from here. The toll has climbed to more than 25 officers killed in the line of duty this year alone. And Congress is now stepping in to protect our heroes in blue. The new term sweeping the nation is Blue Lives Matter. What about White Lives Matter? Oh, you wouldn't do that because you're afraid of being criticized. It's the name behind a bill introduced in the House last week, making an attack on a police officer a hate crime. Now, there's some more people being covered now. Well, at least a lot of them will be white. Sergeant Tony Harrison of the National Trustee for South Dakota Fraternal Order of the Police Incorporated said, "If you are doing something to someone based solely because they wear a badge and a blue shirt, that is, in my opinion, just as bad as shooting them for any other reason," unquote. Wow. Officers risk their lives in the line of duty every day, and sadly, it can cost their life. One died during an attack on a police station in Maryland last week. Detective J.K., what kind of name is that? J-A-C-A-I. Colson's grandmother said, quote, he's in a better place, and he's at peace with all of it now. Well, I'm glad you're satisfied with that. More than 500 of our country's finest, well, I'd argue with that, died in the past 5 years, nearly a third by gunfire, and it's not always by accident. Sergeant Harrison said America's getting much more violent, certainly. Well, so are the cops. The staggering statistics is one of the reasons behind Blue Lives Matter Act. The legislation proposes a mandatory minimum. Knowingly hurting a police officer could leave you behind bars for up to 10 years. Killing an officer could mean up to life in prison. Well, I think they do that now, as far as I know. I know David Tate's in prison for life because he shot it out with a highway patrolman down in Arkansas. Sergeant Harrison said it just gives us another layer of comfort that somebody's going to be out there looking for us if something happens, unquote. Rapid City has seen two officers involved shootings just last month. Sergeant Harrison said it's the best job in the world. I love what I do, even if I do get shot at. But like I said, I hate to wake up in the morning and read of another officer was killed solely because he was doing his job or he was white. Sergeant Tony Harrison has been wearing a badge in the Black Hills for nearly 20 years, more recently working in Rapid City's Drug Task Force. Well, if you get out of this war on drugs, you wouldn't see many cops shot at. If you legalize narcotics, you would not see many cops shot at. Sergeant Harrison said, "I know not everybody likes law enforcement, and I get it. But remember, we are here to protect everybody. Especially the rich folks." House Resolution 4760 was introduced by Colorado Representative Ken, I'm trying to use this to get into higher office, Buck, after a big push by the state's Fraternal Order of Police. It's always good to be on the good side of the Fraternal Order of Police. And in words of their national president, the bill addresses that, Sergeant Harrison said, to kill an officer because of the color of his skin is just as bad as killing someone because of the color of his skin. Actually, it said the uniform. Proponent of the bill in South Dakota plan on calling Representative Kristi Noem to ask her for support. Otherwise, she's going to get stopped on a dark road some night and told what for. Yeah. Well, there's another few thousand people that are going to be given hate crime status, but which may help out a few white cops, but it sure as hell ain't going to wipe out the average white working man, especially the heterosexual white working man. Well, here's what they got going over in jolly old England now. Police are making International Day for Elimination of Racial Discrimination in Redditch, England, today by challenging some of the myths that exist around a hate crime. The United Nations event is marked worldwide and aims to remind people of the negative consequences of racial discrimination and encourage people to take action against it, to tackle it. Make sure those white heterosexual males out there are good boys. Hate crimes of all types are underreported on a national level. The West Mercia Police is committed to giving people the confidence to report their ordeal. If you stub your toe and you're not white, you complain and we'll get them. During the event, police will dispel hate crime myths, including it happens too much to report each one. Oh, it's happening everywhere all the time, man. They were only calling me names. Well, that's a hate crime, man. You called me a son of a bitch. I can't all the police for that. And it happens all the time, so I suppose I'll just have to put up with it. Let them call me names, that's all right. Detective Chief Inspector Jason Downs said there are many reasons victims of hate crime don't report their ordeal. But today we're telling people that there should never be a reason not to report it. Especially if you're robbing a store and the white guy owner resists and he happens to grab you and throw you on the floor and keep you from stealing his stuff, by God, report it, because that's a hate crime. Yeah. Detective Chief Inspector, wait a minute, I've lost my place. Nobody should tolerate being victimized because of who they are. Why don't we just say nobody should tolerate being victimized, period? We take every report of a hate crime seriously and we will respond. Unless it's charged against us cops. How can we... Well, wait a minute. Now we're going to be covered by hate crime law. How can we be charged with committing a hate crime? Because we're covered. Well, I'm telling you, this thing is getting silly. By addressing some of the myths that exist around hate crime, we can give victims the confidence to make a report and tackle the minority of people who commit these offenses. Of course, we'll put it in a file in the computer and it'll go away and it'll never be solved, especially if someone with a lot of money did it. The perpetrator with a lot of money? Hide that report. There's a number of ways to report a hate crime. In an emergency, always call 999. That's in Britain. Don't try it here. But in a non-emergency, you can call police on 101. Anyhow, that's the way it goes when you're trying to make the world a perfect place to live with no violence, no crime, and never base it on anybody's race, because we know all niggers are pacifists. They wouldn't commit a hate crime if they were tortured to do it. once we eliminate the white heterosexual males in society, it's going to be a peaceful world. Well, racism is alive and well, no matter what they want to say about it. A study conducted by researchers at the University of Toronto, obviously a Nazi institution, has confirmed something that many black people have suspected for a long time. Employers discriminate against job applicants with black-sounding names. That's nigger-sounding names. That's moon cricket-sounding names. That's high yellow-sounding names. And on it goes. According to the Guardian newspaper, who are on top of all this stuff, researchers show that when black applicants, nigger applicants, high yellow applicants, mulatto applicants, and so on, whiten their resumes or pretend to be mulatto, half-breeds like the Presidente, it doubled the chances of receiving callbacks and getting a job. The two-year study was recently published in the Administrative Science Quarterly Journal, which makes it absolute truth. Yeah. The researchers sent out 1,600 fictional resumes to employers in 16 American cities. They found that 25% of nigger job applicants who whitened their resumes received callbacks. However, when applicants did not alter their resumes, only 10% received callbacks. Well, I could have told you that. I don't need no fancy outfit or college education to tell you that. According to Sonia Kang, I wonder what color she is, co-author of the study and assistant professor at the University of Toronto, Mississauga, the study also found Asian students whitened their resumes, unslanted their eyes even. Wait a minute. Okay. However, black and Asian students had different ways of doing this. Negro students were more likely to remove references to black organizations from their resumes. Ah, you clever boys. Asian students changed their names to American-sounding ones. Oh, you clever chinks. A black law student told the researcher she did this practice so she could get her foot in the door at a potential employer. Well, that's perfectly honest, yeah. Okay, if you have an African name, or if I'm like president of the African American Society of Niggers, if that's on my resume, they automatically know my ethnicity, she said. And because of that, if I have the same credentials exactly as someone of another race, let's say a white person, then they would get a callback over me and I wouldn't get the job and I'd have to continue collecting welfare. So if from the beginning they don't know my race, then I'm more likely to get a callback. Part of the problem is stereotyping, which is often aided by the media. When people see names like Lakeisha or Tyrone, they carry a connotation which is not always true, but usually is. Crime stories, which dominate the media, often focus on nigger criminals. Yeah, they shouldn't do that. They're not all nigger criminals. Even though white people also commit violent crime. They do? I fiercely deny that. No white person commits crime. And reality shows are also a problem. Many of these heavily edited shows, such as Love and Hip Hop and Basketball Wives, focus on black women behaving outrageously for the cameras. Yeah, especially shaking that big old booty around, like two great big watermelons in a sack. Unfortunately, many white people believe what they see. Well, when they see a black woman with a big booty shaking around, I mean, what are they missing? some nigger people have brought have bought into this stereotyping. Raven Simone, a co-host of The View, who is infamous for infuriating black people with her media gaffes, caught flack last year when she admitted that she wouldn't hire an applicant with a black-sounding name. Yeah, so I guess blacks discriminate against each other. Oh, they wouldn't do that. Isn't that a hate crime? Blacks discriminating against each other? They got to make that a hate crime. Kang said racial minorities shouldn't have to hide their nigger backgrounds just so they can get a job. Quote, some people have found that whitening helps, but I think that the larger message is that it shouldn't be up to minorities to find ways to avoid discrimination. Well, the way you do that is you become half black. You become a mulatto. You become a coffee-colored woman who don't look like such a nigger. And they're moving to the top all over the place. Yeah, because they're attractive to a lot of white men. So you got to do some more gene hijacking. That's your problem. You need more gene hijacking. Whoa. They end the article with, discrimination is still a reality. Good. I'm all for that. Yeah. I'm all for that. Well, here we go with another one. On August 8, 2015, cable news erupted with images and news clips from Negro Lives Matter More, or BLM, activists taking over Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders' stage in Seattle. And nobody did anything about it either. The protests sparked a tidal wave of controversy that even captured Donald Trump's attention. When he spoke to CNN, he said, I would never give up my microphone. I thought that was disgusting. Trump wasn't alone in his disgust. Liberal America loathes the seemingly irrational tactics of the BLM Seattle protesters. This reminds me of back when the Black Panthers were running around in the 70s. Same shit. They used to get white people into a meeting, set them up in the front row, and then say how horrible white people were and how they ought to all be killed. And these same white people would stand up and clap. They'd have standing ovations for the nigger Black Panthers. That's the extreme liberalism, I guess. Commentators from all sides of the political spectrum demanded to know why the BLM, Ball Movement, would attack and berate the most progressive, liberal, socialist, communist, race-mixing candidate in the presidential race. The activist responded, quote, we honor black lives by doing the unthinkable, the unapologetic, and the unrespectable, unquote. Specifically, Ball Movement activist Marissa Johnson named white supremacist liberalism as a crucial barrier to holding Sanders and other white progressives accountable for failing to support the Ball Movement. Well, that's true. Liberal racism is funny. It's very clever and sneaky, and it's all over the place. Still, the question remains, why do present-day activists like Johnson rely on the unthinkable, the unapologetic, and the unrespectable as a means to proclaim their message of freedom and justice for black lives? The answer is simple, because black political activists like those in the Ball Movement are responding to the evolution of racism and systematic oppression in the 21st century. In other words, white people are using code words and doing it a different way. Those sneaky white people. They're not going to quit being racist. America no longer uses white and colored public signs to segregate and marginalize nigger populations. The politicians of today, with the exception of Donald Trump, no longer consider it politically viable to explicitly endorse black economic and political subjugation. They do it through another way. They always do. The only way you could get rid of that is move out, black boys, and go someplace else. We're such bastards, you should want to get rid of, get us out of the way, get separate from us. Go out in the middle of the Mojave Desert and start a town. Nowadays, racial discrimination and disenfranchisement takes a more insidious and covert form. Instead of battling outright racists like Tom Metzger, black Americans are confronted with white supremacist views masked in colorblind post-racial rhetoric. I love it. Thus, contemporary social activists are compelled to respond accordingly. However, abuses against people of color, I better stay out of the sun, are not all inconspicuous. Extrajudicial killings of black people by law enforcement, in other words, white cops, are the worst-kept secrets of American history. From the establishment of the colonial slave patrols to the development of modern American police state, police brutality against people of color in the U.S. is old news, 300-year-old news. Black political activists of today are still attempting to raise awareness about police brutality. Well, just don't interfere with capitalist money-making and you'll be all right. But if you riot and burn down corporate stores, they get a little upset about that. And, of course, the police are there to protect property. Did you know that? Hashtag Black Lives Matter was born out of a long historic tradition of black activists fighting to broaden the conversation around the state violence to include all the ways in which nigger people are intentionally left powerless in the hands of the state. Well, what the hell do you think they all moved to Washington, D.C. for? They love the state. They want to be taken care of. It's their nature. Well, you made them that way by making them slaves. If you'd have left them dependent in Africa to be chased by lions, they'd be much better shape. We cannot ignore the rallying cry against police brutality. Does that mean black police, too? The black police have always traditionally been the most brutal against black people. Just ask any old retired cop. Historically, this issue has been the epicenter of racial justice conflict. Police violence against people of color harkens back to the deeply, deeply rooted social and racialized inequalities that have existed in America since the founding. Well, you finally caught on, or you catch on, it's time to split up.
We don't want you around, and you think we're mean to you, so you got to move on. Otherwise, it's going to end up badly.
The civil rights movement, as victorious as it may have been in some respects, it wasn't really at all, especially not to black poor. They conned them into thinking they won something. Left behind a legacy of unfinished business that activists today are addressing in the contemporary moment. The issues of black America are being re-televised and reinterpreted through hashtags, Twitter chats, and other online forums connecting advocates from around the globe faster than ever before. It's wonderful. It's wonderful. Whether we like it or not, we are witnessing the next chapter in the civil rights history. Oh, America's moral conscience cannot afford to entertain the gross dichotomy of Black Lives Matter versus Blue Lives Matter. Or what about White Lives Matter that dominates the American political discourse today? We owe it to succeeding generations. We do. What do we owe succeeding generations? To tackle issues of criminal and civil justice head on and permanently eliminate historical justice, injustice. We can do this. We just all have to pray together, go down to church, and then go into the streets. Regardless of skin color or racial all people have a role to play in race-related debates. Oh, I'll be right down. I like to debate. These issues are not solved in isolation and are certainly not overcome by silence and passivity. We got to scream and yell and run around. When opportunities present themselves, we ought to respond. Yeah, break the windows, steal the goods, let Whitey know he ain't running show no more. Offer constructive criticism and contribute to the broader mission of constructing a truly race-mixed America. Strike up the band. However, sidestepping the process of addressing the historical roots of America's racial divisions will only delay much-needed social progress. This is right out of Soviet Principle 10, boys and girls. This is exactly out of Soviet Principle 10. It's just been changed around to work with the race mixing. So we may have defeated Russia's economic system, but we incorporated many of their social positions, even though Russia didn't have many blacks. Until we confront and acknowledge the abuses embedded in American institutions and ideologies, social epidemics like police brutality will endure. Well, that was Deanza Cook, a contributing writer for the Cavalier Daily and the Black Student Alliance's biweekly. There you go. That's it. You got the word from on high. Yeah. Let me see if I can get out of here. Well, I think that's about all I can take for today. Yeah. Moonsday. I'm too relaxed and worn out from all the thrilling things I do on the weekend. So I have to take it easy on Monday or my heart might attack me. 14-5, and remember, I have nothing to say. And if you're going to talk, when the cop stops you or anybody in power stops you, if you're going to talk against yourself, there's nothing anybody can do for you, including a lawyer.
Stupid bullshit. And some of them don't know when to stop talking. Those are the dangerous ones, the ones that don't know when the conversation is over. They just go on and on and on and on and on, verbal diarrhea running at the mouth. And dumb shit, stupid shit, trivial shit, shit you're not even remotely interested in.
Did I tell you about my mom and dad? Did I tell you about my mom and dad were down on vacation, this is about 6 years ago, I think, down to Mammoth Cave, Kentucky. I think it was six. Seemed like six. Could have been seven. Somewhere in there. Six, seven, in that area. More than six, less than seven. Let's call it six and a half. So about 6.5 years ago, my mom and dad went on vacation down to Mammoth Cave, Kentucky. You know, now that I think of it, it seems more like 8 years ago. I think about eight would be about the time of Y2K, wouldn't it? Remember that? Remember Y2K? When nothing ever happened. What was that all about? All of a big fuss and nothing ever happened. Anyway. So, about 8 years. Eight was eight or five. One of those. And my dad found a big rock, what he thought was a big rock. And it turns out it was a 27-pound dinosaur turd. A petrified dinosaur turd. And he gave it to my mom. He said, here, Mom, put this is a dinosaur turd. Put this in your purse. And she said, Dad, I don't think this is a dinosaur turd. This thing is still warm. Whoever dropped this thing is still walking around in here. And we better get the fuck out of this cave. Nine years ago. I know it was nine. I know it was nine because my wife was pregnant with our first son, Mahmoud Ibn El Said Ben Salam. And he's 10 now. Or is he 11? He could be 11. He's either 11 or 5. But while all this is going on, you're searching through your mind for something graceful and diplomatic you can say to bring the conversation to a close. And all I can ever come up with is, shut the fuck up! Shut the fuck up! Shut the fuck up! Shut the fuck up!
just to be in a coma. Would that be great? Boy, you know, you just crap out, nothing to do all day. They breathe through a fucking tube, they feed you through a tube, and nothing to do. That's really living, you know what I mean? No phone calls coming in, nobody dropping by unexpectedly. And if they do drop by, you're completely unaware of it. Because you're in a fucking coma, and you're practically clinically dead. And you don't have to listen to their stupid bullshit. Their stupid bullshit. Like about their new ride-around lawnmower with the two-tone horn and the GPS in case they get lost on the lawn. And their boss and their job and their car. Your parents could be in hell right now. Your parents in hell. Your father for sure. Oh, shit. Hell is full of dads. Full of dads. Even the ones who took you to the ball game. Just for beating the shit out of you once too often. And fucking the neighbor lady. And fucking the neighbor dog. And who knows, maybe even fucking the UPS man. We'll never know what mischief Dad was up to. Parents in hell. Kind of gives you a nice feeling, doesn't it? It does me.